During the Great Famine, there was a severe strain on the administration of the time and on the government agencies tasked with alleviating mass starvation and disease. The Chief Secretary's Office, the Poor Law Commission, the Relief Commission, and the Office of Public Works, all of them generated a huge quantity of records, records which are held today in the National Archives of Ireland. We're going to look now at one archive collection known as the Distress Papers, which give us a glimpse of the people and the stories behind the grim famine statistics. The collection is being featured at the moment at rte.ie/history. To talk about it, I'm joined by Elizabeth McAvoy of the National Archives. Elizabeth, you're very welcome indeed to the History Show.
Thank you very much, Miles, and many thanks for the invitation.
Tell us, first of all, what exactly were the distress papers and how and when did they come into being?
The distress papers form a distinct sub-series within a collection that is known as the Chief Secretary's Office Registered Papers. So they're the records of the Chief Secretary, who was based in Dublin Castle, and while nominally subject to the Lord Lieutenant, who was the King or Queen's representative in Ireland, the real work of administering and governing Ireland at that time and throughout the 19th century was actually done by the Chief Secretary himself and his Undersecretary, who were based in Dublin Castle. So the records that were generated in terms of administering the country, the CSORP collection begins in 1818 and runs up until the early 1920s. And it is an absolutely wonderful collection of administrative records, giving a very complete picture of Ireland and how it was governed in the 19th century and into the early 20th. And the distress papers form, as I mentioned, a very distinct or separate series within the CSORP, the Chief Secretary's Office Registered Papers. And they came about for a very specific reason, or came into being in March 1846, because a bureaucratic attempt was needed to manage or organise the avalanche of pleas that were coming in for aid all around the country, from the areas that were being particularly ravaged by the famine at that time.
So I suppose it would be fair to say that administrators, that bureaucrats, were absolutely snowed under with these what are called memorials. We'll talk about memorials in a while. So they needed to kind of separate these papers out into a separate category.
Exactly. They needed really to get a grip or a steer on these records, because obviously the situation was of immense urgency and they needed to be able to respond quickly. So rather than floundering in a sea of memorials, reports, letters and so on as part of the main series, they needed to separate them to be able to treat them differently.
Now, I know they're called the Chief Secretary's Registered Papers, and anybody who's ever been in the National Archives will be familiar with the index, these beautiful big volumes where you can actually increase your muscle mass just by taking one down off the shelf.
That's
they're
true.
Absolutely huge. They're extraordinary, but they're beautiful indexes. But would the Chief Secretary himself actually have seen any of these memorials, any of these distress papers, any of this material coming in? Or would that all have been dealt with by civil servants, by the Undersecretary, for example?
Well, the Undersecretary and certainly the staff in Dublin Castle would, of course, have been tasked with responding to the pleas. But the Chief Secretary would have been made aware of exactly what was going on, because the letters are often addressed to the Lord Lieutenant, of whom really the responsibility had been delegated to the Chief Secretary, but they were written nominally to the Lord Lieutenant. So yes, he would have been aware, the Chief Secretary would have been very much aware of what was coming in, because for the very reason, this is a situation where Ireland is plunged into an absolute catastrophe. So while the responses and, in a sense, the heavy lifting would have been done by the bureaucrats, the administrators and the local relief committees around the country, the Chief Secretary would have been very much aware of what was going on. He wouldn't have been able to avoid it.
What kind of documents were in the distress papers? You've mentioned memorials, for example. What was a memorial?
A memorial is a 19th century word, really, that we would use for petition. nowadays. Petitions that would be got up online where people sign in, very similar where you would have had letters, petitions imploring, pleading for aid, which would be signed by members of, for example, the local relief committees, local clergymen, local grandees, constabulary, justices of the peace and so on. So it's really another word for petition.
And the distress papers, they wouldn't just have been memorials. Is there lots of other material in there?
Plenty of other material. And while their content tends to be routine for this particular period, the type of documents that you would expect to find would be, of course, reports on the extent of distress from around the country, letters relating to the establishment of relief committees, applications for funds granted under famine relief legislation, letters from the Treasury concerning the spending of funds, and also correspondence from the other agencies who were also tasked with alleviating distress. So examples of those would have been the Famine Relief Commission, the Office of Public Works, and the Poor Law Commission. So you had a number of very large organisations, all of whom were dedicated to alleviating the stress from around the country. And the distress papers are a reflection of that, but we also have those type of letters generated by the OPW, the Famine Relief Commission, and the Poor Law. So you had a number of agencies working in tandem with each other.
Now, you've chosen a few extracts, a few documents, three documents in all, for us to have a look at, which show the effect of the famine on ordinary people around the country. One thing that struck me just looking at them straight away was how beautiful the calligraphy is. Belies, if you like, the nature of the content. All of the records you've chosen are from 1846, which was a particularly bad year. Three quarters of the harvest was lost to blight. It was the first really serious year of the famine. Now, the first memorial is from resident cottiers. Those are rural labourers who were let land in very, very small amounts. And this is from Killard in County Clare. Tell me about this.
Yes, it is a memorial or a petition from these very, very small land tenants who were writing in to the Lord Lieutenant in April 1846. And they describe their plight. They say, from swampy state of soil, they have lost all their potato crop and are now the most miserable beings. They await the opening of a public works scheme, a road which had already been sanctioned, which has been delayed. So they say they have been obliged to pawn their day and night covering to provide food and are now suffering from cold and hunger, too much for human endurance. And they ended with, praise their excellency will consider their wretched condition.
The next document you're going to talk about, actually by coincidence, and there's no collusion involved here, but it comes from the town in which I was born, in Kingscourt in County Cavan. And it's a letter from the Relief Committee, which essentially shows a landed class which was pretty much indifferent to the plight of their tenants.
Yes, it certainly does that particular class no favours in terms of what they write. Because local relief committees were financed by local voluntary subscriptions, and they could apply to the Lord Lieutenant for grants in proportion to the money subscribed locally. But unless the local grandees really subscribed, it was very, very difficult to actually operate the local committee. And it got to the stage where the Relief Commission actually instructed local committees to publish their subscription lists so as to discourage non-compliance. So in other words, an early example of naming and shaming them in to contributing. It was a very difficult task to raise the funds. And in this particular example, the committee lays bare its frustration with the landed class. They say, memorialists, conscious of the government's anxious desire to meet the wants of the poor throughout the land, and feeling that it is the duty of the landed proprietors to cooperate with the government on their benevolent exertions, forwarded circulars to 30 landed proprietors connected with their extensive parish, requesting contributions to their relief fund, but are sorry to state that only 3 responded to their applications and that the others have not even answered. So out of 30 circulars, requests for subscriptions, only three in that area of King's Court responded. So you had 27 people who ignored it. And of course, that wasn't unique to King's Court. That was happening all over the country as well.
Now, the final document you picked out is a memorial from tenants in Athenry in County Galway. Presumably they're experiencing the same problems as everybody else.
Yes, in common really with the absolutely calamitous situation and the wretched conditions that many people were forced to live in all along the western seaboard. Again, similar to Killard, they're saying the potato rot, depriving them of all means of support. Their distress is too great for human endurance. Their appeal is for immediate relief, as they have not even a day's provisions for themselves or their starving families. If relief is not sent, their sufferings will be too awful to contemplate. So again, giving us an insight into and giving a voice in many respects to the poor and to the dying, who usually do not appear in administrative records of the time as a matter of course.
Now, obviously, in the National Archives, you're well used to digitization. We are entirely grateful to our own National Archives for example, the 1901 and 1911 census, those brilliant digitization projects. How difficult a project and how extensive a project has this one been, the distress papers?
It was a considerable project because, like with many projects in many organisations, it is the work of a number of people, of divisions within the organisation, who work together to deliver a result. The digitisation of the distress papers for the RTE project is no exception in that regard. Huge credit goes to our senior conservator, Zoe Reid, for conserving the documents prior to digitisation, ensuring obviously that they have been fully conserved and repaired and are ready for digitisation. And also credit enormously to my colleagues in our reprographics unit, who did a wonderful job of digitising the selection, which have been released already on the Famine website since early March. Particular thanks to Hazel Menton, Alina Saronin, Patricia Fallon and Hannah Sheeran for their expertise and also for assisting me with my preparations for today's interview.
Well, it's well worth looking at these. They're absolutely beautiful looking documents. Mm. And as I say, they belie incredibly the distress inherent in the documents themselves. Thank you very much for bringing those just a few stories revealed in this extraordinary archive collection. You can find more stories and information about different aspects of the Great Famine online at rte.ie/history on the Famine Ireland page, a selection of records from the Chief Secretary's Office registered papers for the years 1818 to 1852 can be searched and viewed on the National Archives website. Elizabeth McAvoy is an archivist with the National Archives. Elizabeth, many thanks for joining us this evening.
Thank you very, very much, Miles.